Thank you, Lord, for promising to be with us this morning. Please be with us in our weaknesses and also our strengths. Help us as we relate with each other and also as we prepare for this great year ahead. You have promised to be with us. We cling to that promise, and we also thank you for the help that we get from you through others. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen. Okay, and welcome to all of you. We have a couple visitors with us, and special, welcome to all of you. Okay, we're talking about maximizing students' abilities. In a sense, yesterday we talked about motivated teachers, and a little quip that I'm not sure if I said it, so who doesn't have a handout that would like one? And again, this is more or less just to keep up and kind of understand where I'm going. It's not actually that important. Okay. And I'm going to say something that really puts a sense of responsibility on you a little bit. And I don't mean to frighten you or to put you on a guilt trip. But as we think about motivated teachers, you have to realize that a good teacher... This comes from my dad. A good teacher, and I'll just say a motivated teacher, is half the school. Okay, that's curriculum helps, good schedules help, all that helps. But a motivated teacher is half the school. An unmotivated teacher is all the school. Okay, so write it down. A big part of your job is that you do not know, you're not going to do everything right. You're not going to be able to fully maximize your students' abilities. Even if you have lots of experience and not as much energy, or if you have lots of energy and not as much experience, you're not going to manage it. But a big part of your job is actually to just get out of the way, in a sense to make this student able to flourish, all right? It has been said that you cannot actually teach anybody. You can only make it easier for them to learn. So there's an aspect of that, right? Where you make walking through that portal a little bit easier. I love the story of Temple Grandin, and there's who struggled with autism, had a profound disability in that area. Have you heard of her, Temple Grandin? Okay, she revolutionized how cattle are processed. I'm Canadian now, so I say process. Actually, I don't even do it on purpose, but then I think about it when I hear you guys say process. So how cattle move, she could instinctively feel that, and she revolutionized stockyards here throughout North America and things like that. She had a terrible fear of electronic doors opening and closing, like you have at Walmart and stuff, and she just could hardly get herself to go through them. And in one little time in her life, she was determined that she's going to do it, and a lady saw her that she would just... It would jerk, she would jerk, it would jerk, she would jerk. And it's kind of like this time when you're at an intersection and one goes forward and stops, the other one goes forward and stops, and you just keep getting closer and closer. And it's just, and the lady said, "Here, let me help you." And she just went and stood in the camera, and the door opened, and it just, and she walked through it. And she said, "I made it." I walked through. And the lady smiled at her and said, "Yes, you did, and I helped you." All right? That's a teacher. Get that door open. Make so that person isn't afraid to step through the door, because children want to walk through the door. Now, children are fallen. Children are carnal. They're not born Christians, not even to the best parents, right? You are working with unsaved heathens in that sense, okay? But there is a spark of goodness in humanity that God has put in all of us, all right? And children primarily want to learn. They want to be accepted. They want to just live, to enjoy life, and they're not just bad. Now, again, for whatever reason, it almost seems like some children are bad sometimes. You know, you're probably going to find some, or they're going to find you. And the key is unlocking that, figuring that out. And we are not miracle workers. We're not Jesus. We want to be his hands and feet. We're not God. We don't have full knowledge. We don't have full love. Certainly don't have full holiness, all of that. But with God, with the love of Christ in our heart, we can find a way. And I want to stress that with you, okay? So, no bad students, only unmotivated students. Something we discussed yesterday a little bit. We're talking about vibrant school cultures, and I have visited a number of schools, and I have not come away with a good feeling at all with all of them. All right? And what do you think is the number one thing when you visit a school that kind of leaves you feeling a little bit uneasy? Now, obviously, if you go there and they're just bad, they're disrespectful and they're lipping off and they're just being nasty and they're shouting at each other and it's just bad all the way through. That's bad, okay? That's not actually what I'm talking about. I don't know if I've ever been to a school like that. I'm talking about ones that I'm like, I don't feel really good about where this school is. What do you think it is that I'm noticing? What would you notice?
Their attitudes.
Yeah. So, can we unpack that just a tiny bit? What is it about their attitudes that we're thinking of?
Students argue with their teacher.
So, that's not good. Yeah. All right. The thing that I probably sense the most that kind of gives me the first uneasiness is a sense of boredom, of disinterest. I'm not really interested. Now, if they're being naughty, they're talking back, and that type of thing, that's pretty much of a clear thing. But you know what? Especially as they get high school age and stuff like that, they realize that's not cool. This isn't a good image. And so they will kind of just, whatever. And I've seen young people where they're not in a really good place. And it's often right there. They're not going to be interested. They're not going to engage. They're not going to be that involved and whatever. And I did see that a couple years ago at a specific place I was. And with some parents, and of course the parents were concerned and all of that. And I met that family again recently. And as I walked through the door and there was a little bit happening and a little bit of activity, and I saw this one young lady, and I just felt kind of a swish of joy. Because that girl had found grace, and I could tell it the minute I saw her, and I was so glad for her parents. Because believe me, you love your students, but never underestimate the investment that parents have in their children. There are some very broken homes out there. I understand that, and I admit that. There are things that parents have done with and to their children that I cannot fathom. What was wrong with them? What went wrong in that kind of a school? That kind of a home, sorry. And you may get involved in a home like that. And you may need to be the mature one, the loving one, and all of that. But as a rule, the homes that you're going to be having in your classroom, the parents are the investors. You are the helper. Never forget that. You are there to help the parents and to be the older brother or the... That's kind of what I thought of myself, as the older brother who had been given authority by the parents, and you'd better obey him because you're going to be in trouble with mom and dad if you don't. And gradually I moved on to the uncle. How did that work? And I was just shocked one time. So first of all, I used to relate with my students. It's almost, I was the above peer. I remember my children just talking about the dad would always say, you know, we're going to vote on it, but just be aware of the fact you remember Joy, right?
I do.
Joy was my student for 5 years in Seymour. So you're voting, but my vote is all of yours plus one. So even as an older brother, that's hard. But I kind of related with them on that stage. And then it was the co-teachers. You know, we had more mature teachers and stuff. I kind of related with them as my sort of my equals, my peers, and the children were getting younger. All right. And then it just shocked me one time that I had this teacher who had come from Ontario, and her parents came out to visit, and he's a minister, and so way up there, you know, and I'm kind of looking at him up there, and it suddenly shocked me, you know what? I am way closer to him than I am to his daughter, who is my co-teacher, you know, like, like the one that I'd look at as a peer. So funny things happen like that. And it was kind of interesting. That man's son later became my son-in-law. So that was it was just a shock. I would never have dreamed of that when I first met him. He was something else. Okay, maximizing our students' abilities. By the word abilities, I'm going to be talking holistically here. So we definitely, anything that a child has. So whether it is attitudes the ability to do things or to be things or to vision, anything that's involved with your student, that we want to maximize the potential of that, right? And then minimize the whatever is negative in it. Okay, does that make sense? We will be talking about disabilities and giftedness quite a bit, but I want you to know that I do, if you can think of things to add or whatever, that we'll talk about attitudes and stuff that's a little bit more nebulous and intangible, then by all means, we're going to discuss that along the way, because it's definitely related. But we'll do it sort of in the with the motif of life at school, right? How do we help them at school with what is expected at school, okay? So start off with a question that I do not have an answer for. What do you think is more difficult, working with disabilities or giftedness in your students or our students? It's not a wrong answer. I'll just be curious. It's not a wrong answer, but I have an opinion.
What about if they're both in the same student?
Yeah. What do you focus on if they're both in the same student? Probably the disability. More.
Yeah, less resources for the giftedness.
Yeah. One of the great wonders of our time and our age is the fact that we do have more and more resources for disabilities. And we'll talk about that. I went to a class taught by Jonas Sauter. How many of you have ever been taught by Jonas Sauter? It's wonderful. It's a good experience. You see him on the list, go to his class. It doesn't matter what he's teaching. Go. Okay. So it was about giftedness, actually, and challenging the full potential of your gifted student. And there were only about a handful of us in that room, which was unusual for someone in his classes, all right? And he commented about it, that if this had been about disabilities, this room would be packed. All right, because the things that weigh us down and that we struggle and work with are disabilities. But I find two things. One of them is that we just don't think about so much about the giftedness and how to challenge that and keep that gifted student A running at as full a power load as disabled student B, right? And how do we get that? And I find that very subtle and tremendously easy to overlook, especially by overworked teachers. If you don't have to do it, then you very likely won't do it in some of these things. So we do want to talk about giftedness, but as you can see, most of it is about disability, and then I want to apply some of the same principles to the gifted student. And I just didn't... I always have way too much, but as we go along, you can think about how does this now? How many of you are have not taught at all, but this is going to be your first year coming up? Okay, well, not so many of you. Awesome. Okay, so most of you have some experience to fall back on with the new teachers. Get whatever you get. Okay, we're rooting for you. It's going to be good, and you don't have to figure this out. Just give it your best shot. Okay, and don't think like you need to measure up and you got to get this or whatever. It'll sort itself out as it comes along. There will be a way, right? Get that. We will find our way through this if we have a love for the Lord and a love for our students. There will be a way that you will manage to figure something out. Okay? All right, so some principles for maximizing the potential of students with specific disabilities. So, I'm going to do a little bit like I did in my geography classes, and I'll write on the board as we go along to give me something to do. And you may mock my writing if you like, but probably you won't. It's not good. Find and harness their strengths. Yes, they have them. Everybody has strengths. Always find that place, and it's a way to come back to that common ground. Never address a weakness if you cannot actually verbalize or articulate a strength. Okay, you're not ready for it. You have to find those good spots and get your mind on there, and be able to bring it up. Okay, and there'll be some more things about that. And I will say this too. Now, it's supposed to be more or less a rule, and I find it more or less true, is that every strength has a corresponding weakness, and every weakness has a corresponding strength. And so that weakness is pointing toward a strength somewhere. Again, we can kind of, it sounds cute and good and all of that, and when it comes right down to reality, it can be hard to sort out what do I do with that. But find it. Find the strength, okay? All right. Face the issues compassionately and clearly. I'm not sure I'm going to write all of these up. Compassion. No, I forget if they're supposed to be E there or not. I'm an atrocious speller, but it seems like it's right. So, and clearly. Now, I'm actually talking about different things here. All issues. So the issues are the negative stuff, the things that need to be worked on. All right. So the strengths, that those still need to be worked on, but that's not what I'm talking about quite so much. It's like we have an issue. What do we do with that issue? So face it compassionately and clearly. I will tell you two stories quickly here. Let's see. I have this somewhere else, so I don't know if I do, so I'll say this right now. As I was writing this and thinking about it, a vision came to my mind. It was at PTA, and it involved David and Marcia, and so here they are here today. So I'm going to tell the story anyway, but hopefully it'll be all right. Everybody has something to work on, and as we would get to PTA, I would often try to think of it. Now, what would I like for this student to be working on and improved and whatever else? And then, especially as a young teacher, you can be a little bit intimidated by who you're talking to, depending on who it is. And maybe you want them to like you and whatever else. And so, depending on who it is, you may adjust your approach a little bit. And that can be wise. I mean, figure out who your parents are as well and what works with them and so on. What I found is this, is again, if there are issues, and if you can approach it from the fact that you love this student, but you want their advice on how to work with the issue, they, instead of being hostile, there's my Canadian thing again, to you, they will actually often appreciate that approach, because parents do know, even if they're a tiny bit defensive about their children, that they need work on stuff. And if they can just feel that, you know what, we're together on this, they will kind of come to support you, figure it out together and all that. And just the vision I got as I was actually kind of writing this, whatever, I just remembered talking to David and Marcia, and it wasn't Joy, so that kind of makes it fairly clear. in this case, but I knew that their daughter was impulsive and that it got her into trouble sometimes, okay? And at the same time, there was a heart of love in that child that could be easily overlooked, and she might have struggled academically just a little bit more. And I, then Joy, let's say. Okay, so Joy was very smart and easy and much ignored, therefore. Let her go, she just, whatever. So I just remember that moment as a young teacher, a little bit nervous about this. This is my uncle and aunt, and I'm talking about their precious child, and now what are they gonna, how they're gonna respond? And the warmth that came back to me that, yes, this is good. And me trying to project the fact that I actually care about this person and I want the best for them. How can we do it? And that's some advice that I've given to teachers over and over again. Ask advice from the parents. Don't just tell them what they should be doing, what they should be doing, right? Ask for their advice. And I don't even remember the specifics of it. I just remember a warm feeling. It kind of is that thing, how is it that teach me something and I might remember it, but how you make me feel, I will remember. That's especially true if you're used to this personality thing about feeler, thinker, and judger, perceiver, and stuff like that. That's especially true for people who are on the feeling side of it, which I am. Work with your parents. But I remember thinking, be very clear what it is you're trying. Not just this nebulous thing that you misbehave all the time. Be clear with what is it that you think should be fixed, or what, even if it's an attitude issue, what is the attitude, and what can we do about it? And then, that's, be clear and compassionate. Like, you're not against this child. And then as you talk to the child, you also need to be compassionate. There's often a lot of stuff going on inside there that we don't realize any more than other people don't realize what's all going on inside of me, right? So, which I think they forget that on a regular basis. So, I will tell you a quick story about that. Brian was, my brother was being scolded by one of his parents. And when I say parents, I'm talking about the students' parents. And he was being told, you know, when you correct something or give a bit of criticism, always say at least three nice things first. And so then this person went on to list about two or three or four things that Brian was doing wrong. And Brian is multiplying this in his head. Okay, that means 3, 6, 9, 12 good things that we're supposed to be saying. They never came. All right. So you're going to have to get used to that. People tell you how to do it with their students, and they don't do that to you. All right. Just figure it out. That's what's going to happen. So that doesn't let you off the hook, though. So be compassionate. Be clear. I have told this story a number of times, but I want to say it now again. And so some of you may have heard this. I know my relatives did over there. But we have had a number of unique disabilities in, it seems like wherever I go, these disabilities come cropping out of the woodwork and grab me, and not quite ready for it. But in Bay Tree, we've had a couple, and there was one especially who, because of it, his mom, who was very supportive, sent him to school late. He was big for his age, and not just big as in large, but strong and tall and athletic. And extra, a little bit slower, and then, you know, we were going to work with it, and it just, his teacher, it was her first year, and she was extremely right-brained and organized and all of that, and he's completely on the other side of the spectrum, and kind of obnoxious and maybe a little bit threatened, and in his genetic makeup, a little bit of a bullying and loud, strong temperament to begin. It just went to pieces in different ways, and we tried so many things. And I gradually, I was working with him as well, and figuring out that, you know, it's just words and the wiring that interprets language. There's something missing in there, and it was like I described it as he could understand about every third word. And this is whether it's auditory or, well, even more if it's written, but even if it's auditory. And certainly, my mom used to say, I couldn't remember more than three things at a time. You know, never send Steve for more than three things, because he gets to four and he forgets all of them. So that was a little bit like with him, too, only it was he'd get the order mixed up and just all kinds of stuff. So as he got older, he got more angry. And we did try to work with him and love him and still be firm and all that stuff. And his mom just got so frustrated with him, and his dad to an extent as well. And then, you know, they were supportive people, but we were working together. But it was tough, and especially his mom and I. The one time that I was able to communicate very clearly with him was after our hockey games. He would, and we can play hockey for a long time up there in the wintertime, usually from, you know, end of November through the end of March type of thing. And so it's a big part of our phys ed program. And if his team won, that was okay. But if he lost, he was just angry. He was so committed, and he would just take that puck and he would tear up the ice and smash it into the goal, and then as it bounces out, just tear back again, and terribly fast. Like he was a superb skater. And so we just couldn't have this keep on going. It's like it's when it's time to go in and everybody just thrashes around, and that doesn't work, and it takes a while to get their skates on, off, and organize, and whatever. In his case, I had told them a number of times when the bell rings or I say it's time to go in, like we might say the next goal wins or something like that, and that's it. No more hitting the puck. And then, you know, I'm a little bit gentle with it, but he just did it, and then he did it again. I tell him, don't do it again. So after about the third or fourth time, I waited till we were inside the school and would sat down, and then story. And I love story. And as a rule, my students have liked story. All right, but this is like, we've got to resolve this issue here. And I waited till everybody was there, because I would normally confront the child in private, but that had already happened, and everybody's seeing it. And then we have some other kind of boys who are also a tiny bit naughty, you know, and so they're kind of feeding off of this as well. And it's like, okay, here we go. I want you to understand that when I say it's time to go in and you play with the puck, you're off the ice for the next whole day, right? And I will either give you work to do, or we'll find something so you can be productively occupied. That might come up again, whatever, but you will not go on the ice at all. And this was a big deal with him. And he kind of muttered around a little bit with himself, and I had told him, I'm doing this because everybody's seeing you do this, and everybody hears me say you're not supposed to. That's why I'm doing it here. And I said, Colson, I need to know that you understood what I said. Do you know what's going to happen the next time this works? And again, and he did. He said, oh yes, I understand. All right, it never happened. That was it after that. So what happened there? I made sure he understood. In spite of having a disability with it, it was going to be, I knew that he understood, and I knew that he knew that I understood that he understood. Okay, all right, that was clear. The compassionate aspect is this, is when you address a specific issue, make sure you do not overstate the punishment. Make sure that you are actually willing to do this, all right? And it's not going to be the end of the world, like, please, 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 God, make him listen, because I don't know what I'm going to do if I actually have to do what I said I'm going to do, all right? Now, I have already said I'm going to talk to your parent. Like, if something doesn't happen quickly, I'm going to call your dad, all right? So, stuff like that. When you tell them, make sure you think about it, that you are willing to do this. Is it time?
Not the bell. It's a kid playing.
Okay. Okay, so as you communicate clearly with consequences, think those consequences through and make sure you know that you are willing to put them in play. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm going to keep rolling, and then I'm going to give you a chance to speak up if you want, but I'm going to pressure you just a little bit more this time. Understand that issues... Oh, I want to tell you one more story about Colson. Since I said his name, I'll say it again. Colson did become a Christian. His attitude did shift. He was baptized a while ago, and he went from being loud and obnoxious to quiet. He still struggled enormously. We got him through high school, but it was a specific track that he had to follow. And here's another rule. With your disabilities and stuff like that, find reachable goals and then try to get to them. Do not just tail off in the middle of nowhere, right? Find a goal that this person can do right? With the parents. Always involve the parents, right? They're more important than the school board. A lot more important than the school board, okay? So get your parents, like, what are they comfortable with? And what can we do that they would be happy to see? And then, you know, what's an attainable goal? If it's just out of reach, it'll become clear. Find those goals. That happened. It was a win. He learned to read, mostly by sight reading. And I don't know how much he comprehends, especially when he's reading fast or like clearly. But he can read, like in Sunday school and stuff like that, as it comes around, he can read. And that's a huge win. It was a big deal for him to learn this in any way of getting it done. And then a couple weeks ago, he got up in front of our church. We have a small church, so it's not that big a deal, but it's, you know, more people than ever here. And he was going to be superintendent. And the person who was gone had asked him to be superintendent. And he had the text out, so he's going to read it. And he has developed a number of loves. He loves hunting, and he works for an outfitting thing where they go into the Yukon for months at a time. And he does this guiding up there in those northern wilderness wastes that he just, and beautiful stuff, actually. He's learned to work on the job, although you have to be, oh, wow, I wondered if you were going to come. This is my mom. Okay, so, and finding his way, I think Dad must be around the corner. finding his way along, he's found a path, but, you know, reading is still hard for him. He gets up and he's going to read this lesson and make a few comments, and he just looked at us and he said, well, as all of you know, I love the outdoors, and I like to hunt and things like that, and I would rather feed a bear with my hands than do this. And it's, you would think that it's kind of silly, but he actually has gotten close enough to bears to touch them and that kind of thing, and he gets birds to land on him, and he's really a phenomenal person with the outdoors. But, you know, that I would rather feed a bear. But, you know, his mom and I, we missed it up a little bit. That was like, we kind of looked, and that was a big deal that he got up and he read this thing and he gave a few appropriate comments that showing that he had read it and understood what was in there, and then, you know, coordinated the program very nicely. So there are good wins. Not everything's a win in the sense that we get it to where we think it should, where everything comes out the way we wish it would. That's not going to happen. But we need to figure that out as well, and maybe we'll talk about that some other later. Understand that issues exist in a web. We cannot work on all issues. But when you conquer one problem, it helps with other problems. And I just have seen that over and over again. So find that problem and work on it. So now, with that in mind, my next word is prioritize. Prioritize the issues to be intentionally confronted. We, especially for you younger teachers, again, with love, with a relationship, with an understanding and prayer, you will get through. But as you get more experience, be more intentional, more figure it out-ish sort of a thing. And so analyze your issues a little bit. What is that web? What is a specific thing that we can work on? I had a young lady that I taught math, and it was incredible, the pressure that went between the two of us. And I have a wonderful relationship with her now, and I did even then. But like getting her to understand fractions and what multiplication means as compared to division. It was phenomenally hard for her. And it's like, here's the problem. And what do you do? Add. No, Lindsay, not subtract. no, that multiply. No, divide. It was about that big, that exaggerated. It was just like, yeah, she was an optimist. She does not have a clue what the difference is between multiplication and division, except you do a different program with it. And And one day, she was about in fourth grade, I started teaching her math in third grade. She came down and, "Mr. Overholt, I know what multiplication is." "What is it?" "It's adding equal groups." "Yes!" "Look for equal groups and you're going to be adding them," and stuff like that. Oh, that was a great win. And later I would come back to that division, you know, dividing it into, cutting it up into equal groups. What are they wanting to do? Are they wanting to cut it up or add? Okay, so figure it out. That young lady actually had a number of issues to work on. Math is somewhere, somehow became the catalyst of her math, of her school program. And it's as she won in math, everything else got better. All right? So things exist in a web. All right, I'm going to let you speak up in just a moment. I'll go down one more. When you think about what is the basic thing for a child to learn in school, and I'm talking academics here, what comes to your mind?
Reading.
Right? So, in one way or another, encourage reading development. All right? Reading is at the center of everything. You can't do math without reading in one way or another, at least not generally speaking. And all other disciplines go back to reading in one way or another. Okay, so encourage reading development. Quick little bit of advice. As I have more experience teaching upper grade students than I do lower grade, although especially with disabilities that have gone down all the way to, I did have one child who could not read. She was going to school for her third year and she could not read. She was an American girl, but she was in Romania. So she was completely mixed up. And she did learn how to read. That I consider one of the greatest triumphs of my life, teaching a very dyslexic child how to read. And later she went on to college and she has thanked me since. So it's a wonderful thing, but that's kind of like the stretch of my low stuff as far as that. And as they get a little bit older and you're working on reading comprehension, what's the thing to focus on? How do you teach reading comprehension? All right, because that tends to be a little bit of a general problem. So I'm just gonna tell you what I found to be helpful, because I love to get discussion, but we have to keep rolling, don't we? And that is this. Math story problems. More than the reading curriculum that they're taking, much more than the language arts and all of that, the way to teach reading comprehension is emphasize story problems in math and get really, really upfront and personal about how you're doing this with physical objects and stuff like that, and then take those sentences apart and figure out what are they asking you to do in order to understand how to get through the end. And often, you know, they come up to me with that issue and they can't figure out this problem. You know, I might glance at it, but I'll have them read it out loud. What is it? And then my next question is one sentence, maybe read through the whole thing. Okay, you got the picture now, and I'll read the first sentence. And then my question is, what do you not understand in that sentence? Okay, is there anything you do not understand? And explain it to me. Okay, now the next one. And what do you understand? Okay, then do it. All right, what does that sentence say to do? And just very, very slowly take that apart. It's so painful and slow that they don't want to do it. Right? They want to get their work done and get that on. All right, for reading comprehension, I have found math story problems to be very, very helpful. I don't want to frustrate them, so I may take some out, but I will never cancel all the story problems in a job I would much in a lesson I would much rather take out some of the other stuff. Okay, all right. Up to this point, do you have anything you want to quickly add or ask? Okay, I'm not going to give you much time. Okay, so raise your hand if you have an issue. I want to add to something. Encourage reading development. All right, the next one is just kind of a two-word thing. And that is involve, I'm just terribly curious if anybody was going to guess. just a hint, play is coming later, so don't say play. All right, involve music. How many of you have heard of the Voces 8 method? Yeah? I see a kind of a little wave. I'm not even sure. Did you raise your hand or not? Yeah. No. Okay. All right. Voces 8 method. Okay. How many of you heard of the Voces 8 singing group? That's a little bit more. Okay. So one of their educational things that they do is they go into school, public schools. Well, actually, they'll go to private schools too in England or in the U.S., but other places are based in England, and they especially focus in England. And they work with students on music. It's specifically singing, all right? And it can apply then to instruments and so on. And they get things happening, and it is terribly depressing from a music teacher's perspective, how fast they can take absolute ignorance and turn it into a brilliant work of art. And I am just like, oh, why can't I do that? But anyway, it's phenomenal. All right, what I learned in that, what they're saying in that, is that as students sing and involve themselves in music, not just listening music, but involved in music in one way or another, the hemispheres of the brain are talking to each other, and it helps with math and reading comprehension enormously. And then there maybe was one other thing that they kind of put, but I remember those two things. That was very interesting to me, and I know that not all of you will have instruments in your communities and stuff like that, but I did have a young man who struggled very, very much with reading comprehension and other math in general and some of that stuff, and they started giving him piano lessons, and it was just very basic. But the almost instant gain in comprehension was phenomenal to me. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing to me that learning how to make pitch and rhythm work together was like it wired something in there. So involve music. However you need to do that, get it into your class. And I do find that singing every day was not always fun, and especially if the students are grouchy and stuff like that. And then I would often use it as a mini music class almost every devotional. Okay, work with them on developing a conscious stewardship of time. Okay, so how many of you have had slow getting the work done? Typically, I find slowness is involved either in just genetics, they're just kind of ponderous no matter what. Sometimes they're lazy, sometimes they're distracted, and sometimes they're obsessed with details. All right, all of that can make so that they are slow. All right, one thing again I found, all things are connected. The web, figure it out for one subject, how to get them caught up and ahead a little bit. And it starts bleeding through to other subjects, all right? It's when they're behind in every subject and they just cannot catch up and whatever else. It can be very difficult. Encourage a routine in their life that they can establish that is workable. And again, do it with the parents. Like if they go home, I had one, we were doing social studies together, so I had a young lady who had a difficult time with getting her work done. Well, I talked to her parents, and Jody is going to bring her work home. And I would like her to get it done there in one way, like if she doesn't get it done in the allotted time, that she has to get it done at home before she does anything else. Or at least play period or you know, phone or something like that. Keep that limited. You know, they just worked with me, and it just brightened up. As she would come to school with that lesson ready, she did not have to worry about getting it ready during the day. And it just seemed like it freed her up. That happened to other people. I use the term get ahead of the curve, where and teaching them that if they're not constantly struggling to catch up, you have so much more forgiveness and wiggle room in that. It's liberating. It works in all areas of life, finances included. If you're always trying to catch up, okay, so get that. Get them with their time stewardship that they are able to get ahead and work with them and their parents on a, I said finances, so what's the word for that? Budget. A time budget, all right? They have to do this before they do that. Okay, be creative and spontaneous and humorous as you discuss difficulty and victory. Humor is the rubber sword that makes a point without drawing blood. So keep it humorous. It's not the end of the world. Figure it out. Okay, stay in touch with students' interests and their home life. Know what's going on with them. Stay in touch with the students' actual schoolwork. Don't be afraid to subtract or add some. You're in charge, not the curriculum. But work with that student, all right? I could spend a lot of time. How many of you work with CLE? Okay, I became a grudging admirer of CLE. I didn't think I wanted to, but I did as we moved to a Bay Tree that we had, and I have liked it. And I have discovered you can develop that almost on an individualistic basis and still keep them together in a class if you think about it ahead of time. And if you want more specifics on that, talk to me about it. I'll tell you what we do. But you can find a way that works for that child. Every child needs to be challenged, gifted and non-gifted. So find a way that challenges them and hold them to it, but then not so much that they're so deeply frustrated that they can't get through. All right, is that our time? Okay. So, hey. Vocally encourage productivity. I would say it very many times that I want you to be productively engaged. Okay. You can look over all this other stuff, and the last one there is play with your students them and encourage them to play together. I was very challenged by how students play together is how they will do church together. That was profound. All right, so we didn't talk too much about this, giftedness and all of that, but challenge your students, right? Every student is different. Find that key to that child and work with them. You're dismissed. That? No. Well, you want them? I could just write them up, I guess. If you want to write down, I can just quickly write them in. Avoid the ego. It's not yours to blame or yours to take the credit for. Be aware that we too have gifts and disabilities. I'll leave the disabilities out. Don't let the seriousness of the situation cripple you from pursuing larger and personal goals. Love your students and their parents.